This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On television, Christmas season means it's time for A Charlie Brown Christmas, It's a Wonderful Life, and A Christmas Carol. But on public radio, it means time for The Santaland Diaries, David Sedaris' funny and cynical journal of the season he worked as an elf in Macy's Santaland. The Santaland Diaries are included in his collection of Christmas-related stories called Holidays on Ice. Sedaris' stories and journal entries are featured on Morning Edition and This American Life. Several of his plays have been produced in New York. Last December, we invited him to talk with us about Christmas in his family and to read an excerpt of one of the stories in Holidays on Ice. This story shows what might happen if a tough-minded and pretentious drama critic reviewed Christmas plays staged by elementary school kids.
Front row center with Thaddeus Bristol. Trite Christmas. Scottsfield's young hams offer the blandest of holiday fare. The approach of Christmas signifies three things: bad movies, unforgivable television, and even worse, theater. I'm talking bone-crushing theater, the type our ancient ancestors used to oppress their enemies before the invention of the stretching rack. We're talking torture on a par with the Scottsfield Dinner Theater's 1994 revival of Come Blow Your Horn, a production that violated every tenet of the Human Rights Accord. To those of you who enjoy the comfort of a nice set of thumbscrews, allow me to recommend any of the crucifying holiday plays and pageants currently eliciting screams of mercy from within the confines of our local elementary and middle schools. I will, no doubt, be taken to task for criticizing the work of children, but as any pathologist will agree, if there's a cancer, it's best to treat it as soon as possible. Once again, the sadists at the Jane Snow Hernandez Middle School have taken up their burning pokers in an attempt to prod A Christmas Carol into some form of submission. I might have overlooked the shoddy production values and dry, leaden pacing, but these are sixth graders we're talking about, and they should have known better. There's really no point in adapting this Dickensian stinker unless you're capable of looking beyond the novel's dime store morality and getting to what little theatrical meat the story has to offer. The point is to eviscerate the gooey center, but here it's served up as an entree, and a foul pudding it is. Most of the blame goes to the director, 11-year-old Becky Michaels, who seems to have picked up her staging secrets from the school's crossing guard. She tends to clump her actors, moving them only in groups of five or more. A strong proponent of trendy, racially mixed casting, Michaels gives us a black Tiny Tim, leaving the audience to wonder, what? Is this kid supposed to be adopted? It's a distracting move, wrong-headed and pointless. The role was played by young Lamar Williams, who, if nothing else, managed to sustain a decent limp. The program notes that he had recently lost his right foot to diabetes, but was that reason enough to cast him? As Tiny Tim, the boy spends his stage time essentially trawling for sympathy, stealing focus from even the brightly lit exit sign. Bob Cratchit, played here by the aptly named Benjamin Trite, seems to have picked up his Cockney accent by watching a few videotaped episodes of Hee Haw, and Herschel Fleischman's Scrooge was almost as lame as Tiny Tim. The set was not without its charm, but Jody Lennon's abysmal costumes should hopefully mark the end of a short and unremarkable career. I was gagging from the smell of spray-painted sneakers, and if I see one more top hat made from an oatmeal canister, I swear to God I'm going to pull out a gun. The problem with all these shows stems partially from their maddening eagerness to please. With smiles stretched tight as bungee cords, these hopeless amateurs pranced and gambled across our local stages, hiding behind their youth and begging, practically demanding we forgive their egregious mistakes. The English language was chewed into a paste, missed opportunities came and went, and the sets were changed so slowly you'd think the stagehands were encumbered by full-body casts. While billing themselves as holiday entertainment, none of these productions came close to capturing the true spirit of Christmas. This glaring irony seemed to escape the throngs of ticket holders who ate these undercooked turkeys right down to the bone. Here were audiences that chuckled at every technical snafu and applauded riotously each time a new character wandered out onto the stage. With the close of every curtain, they leapt to their feet in one ovation after another, leaving me wedged into my doll-sized chair and wondering, is it just them, Or am I missing something?
David Sedaris reading an excerpt of one of his stories from his collection, Holidays on Ice. Thanks for reading that, David. I'm wondering what made you think about, a theater critic who goes to sixth grade school productions and applies his astringent facilities on these sixth graders.
I was in France when I was writing these stories, and I had a stack of old New York magazines there. And John Simon is a theater critic for New York Magazine. And I may have missed it, but to my knowledge, he has never liked anything. So I was just thinking that what if a person like him was assigned to review children's theater? Because if you were a child, if you're 7 years old, what do you do with this review?
Oh, really? Did you participate in school Christmas plays when you were a kid?
I didn't go to, I went to a public school. I think if I had gone to a Christian school, I probably would have snagged the part of a donkey or a shepherd or something. But no, I was never, our school would have a pageant every year. Just a very simple thing, but it was mainly the students would dress up and get on stage, and then they would pull out all the janitors. And the janitors would receive dented cans of fruit cocktail or cans of Crisco. And then the janitors would bow their heads and thank us for it, and that was the pageant.
Wow. your most famous story, The Santaland Diaries, is collected in this new Christmas collection, Holidays on Ice. And I'm wondering if you've ever gone back to Macy's Santaland, where you once worked as a Christmas elf, just as an observer to see what it's like now.
No, but I got a call last week from a former Santa, and because Macy's changed their Santaland this year. They spent millions of dollars, and my understanding is that now it's like an interactive Santaland.
Like with computers and stuff?
Yeah, the children were having riots. You know, they were waiting for 2 hours to see Santa, and all they saw were some elves and a couple of candy canes, and that wasn't enough for them, so they've spent a lot of money, and they've... I just read an article about it in the newspaper, but apparently there's, I don't know, virtual... Because I don't have a computer, I don't even know exactly what these words mean, but something about it is virtual.
You don't have a computer?
And maybe you can send Santa email. I don't know. No, I've never touched one. So whenever I hear words like .org, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Do you hear from a lot of current and former Santaland elves who want to commiserate with you?
I hear from former elves and Santas who have written screenplays. Those are the former elves and Santas that I tend to hear from.
My guest is David Sedaris. His collection of Christmas-related stories is called Holidays on Ice. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with David Sedaris. Now, I want to talk to you more about what Christmas is like for you and what it's been like for you. What was Christmas like in your family when you were growing up? Did your family celebrate it or give gifts?
Oh, we were very involved in Christmas. I mean, we still are. You know, Christmas begins the day after Halloween, basically, and then everything is just this march towards Christmas. And, oh, we're big gift givers. And I love Christmas, absolutely love it.
What went on in your house on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
Well, when we were children, we had to go to church on Christmas Eve, but it was a Greek Orthodox church, and so it was pretty, and they were, you know, still you just wanted to get out of there, but it didn't take that long. And we would usually be up all night, you know, wrapping gifts or... By the time we were a teenager, by the time we were old enough to smoke pot, we were definitely awake all night. And, but not with that, oh, I think I hear Santa thing. That's like, I think I hear Dad coming downstairs, throw the roach out the window kind of thing. But no, we were really, my mom always my mom was kind of in charge of, my mother was responsible for making Christmas so wonderful. You know, just doing mom things. You know, baking mom things and buying mom kind of gifts and putting, you know, wreaths on the door that we would just make fun of, but still we were glad that they were there.
What are some of the best gifts you ever got?
I got an electric typewriter, which really changed my life. I'd been using a manual typewriter forever. And then at the age of 32, my mother gave me an electric typewriter where you could correct things. You know, you could go up two lines and that word would be gone. And that was a present that really changed my life. Last year, I got a really nice taxidermied ostrich, a little baby ostrich. That was a nice gift.
Who gave that to you?
My sister Gretchen gave me a stuffed ostrich. It is just adorable. It's about a foot tall. I got a lot of taxidermy last year for Christmas, and that's always a good gift. Gosh, you know, I mean, I've never received, like, the title to a country home or anything like that. It's
maybe next year. But do you remember the worst gift you ever got?
The worst gift I ever got was probably a football helmet, which I had absolutely no use for whatsoever.
I can only
imagine.
That's
not even good for storing things.
Who gave it to you?
My father.
Is that wishful thinking on his part?
He went through a phase where all of the gifts that he gave me would hopefully wake me up to the world of sports. So maybe I would have asked for a discreet, you know, portable tape recorder so I could spy on people, and instead I would get a child-sized set of golf clubs, which the cat was the only person who would enjoy them. She would just shred the golf bag to bits, but she was more than welcome to them.
And what about you as a gift giver? Are you a careful and thoughtful gift giver?
I think I am. I always feel so bad. You know, when people say, well, I'm going to do my shopping on Christmas Eve, I feel bad for the people that they're giving gifts to, because you're not going to find anything on Christmas Eve. That kind of panic buying that people do,
mm-hmm.
I love watching it, and I'll still go to the store on Christmas Eve just so I can see people that panic.
But do you really do that?
Yes. I have. I love, like, the same way I love going to the grocery store the night before Thanksgiving, and I'll just buy a head of lettuce, but I'm more than happy to stand in that line for 45 minutes just to see people at the breaking point. But I got most of my, I have a few things to buy, but for the most part, I finished my shopping by August.
Really? So you must always be thinking about potential gifts for people.
Well, I don't think about it in February, but I think about it by March.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to shop, and this gives me a reason to do so.
Did you ever go caroling during your life?
No, carolers are one of those things that even my mother would be like, don't answer the door, don't answer the door. They're at the Shirk's house, or they're coming this way. Turn out the lights, hide. Because I don't know how you respond. Do you know what I mean? Like when you open the door and then there's people there singing and they're looking at you. It's like, do you just give them the money now and maybe they'll go away or maybe they'll stop? Caroling is what, it's like mime to me. It's just one of those things where I don't know what choice the spectator really has. It's just so uncomfortable.
You live in Manhattan now. There probably aren't a lot of people out caroling in Manhattan.
Well, I don't have to worry about them coming to the door in my apartment. Someone would have to buzz them in. And so I don't worry about them coming to my door. And that's a good thing about living in a city.
You know, when you're young, you spend Christmas the way your parents spend it. When you get older, you have the option of, you know, maybe doing it with friends or whatever. You're not necessarily home with your family. Do you remember, like, the first Christmas that you were old enough to decide for yourself how you were going to spend it?
I'm 40 years old, and I've never missed a Christmas at home.
Really?
Never.
Mm-hmm.
I because you can't really expect good presents unless you're going to show up and get them in person. And if somebody thinks that they can mail you something, then you're liable to get anything. You're liable to get a pound cake or something like that. But if they know that they have to face you and hand you a gift, then you're much better off by going home. I can't, there's no other place I would want to be for Christmas, really, than with my brothers and sisters.
David, I would like to end our Christmas interview by asking you to sing a rendition of one of your favorite Christmas songs, a song that is a favorite because you particularly love it or hate it.
Well, somebody sends us a tape every year of different obscure Christmas songs that he puts together. And there's one, and I don't have quite have all the words, but it's it's like a really obnoxious child with a full voice, almost like a young Wayne Newton voice. And it's, I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a dinky, I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I can see it now on Christmas morning creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes and see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. And then he restates again and again reasons why he wants a hippopotamus and the fact that the hippopotamus will most likely be a vegetarian. That's the gist of the song. But I can listen to it over and over and over again. It's just so confident. And it's not a, and it's not like a wacky song, you know, like not like when they have babies crying out Silent Night or dogs barking it or something. It's really just a wonderful little song. And I don't even know the fellow's name who sang it.
David Sedaris, recorded last year after the publication of his book Holidays on Ice. He'll read more of his holiday stories on the Christmas edition of the public radio program This American Life.